Illegal dumping has always been a problem, but in some neighborhoods, it's pervasive, and residents are sick of it.
It's always trash up there. Somebody's always coming up here, dumping something, throwing something over there.
I'm Kara Holsoppel. This week on the Allegheny Front, what will it take to clean up illegal dumping sites for good? Plus, we've all heard that Pittsburgh's air quality is much better than it was.
You can look out and see whatever you're looking at before. With all the smoke and the stuff from the coke ovens, it was bad.
But data show industry is still holding the region back from making progress on cleaner air. And 40 years ago, President Carter made history by declaring a man-made environmental disaster a federal health emergency.
And it wasn't a type of thing where it was a tornado or a hurricane. This was a slow-motion disaster.
Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. We really rely on our news partners to bring you the best regional environmental news coverage. And to be honest, most of us at the Allegheny Front are on vacation this week. So we're letting those news partners do the heavy lifting on this show, starting with a story about increased water quality problems tied to global climate change. It's affecting the way people fish, boat, and swim on Lake Erie. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports on the findings of a new study.
In a paper published last month in the Journal of Park and Recreation Administration, researchers surveyed people along Pennsylvania's 77 miles of Lake Erie shoreline. They found things like harmful algal blooms and E. coli bacteria were impacting visitors. Lead author Michael Ferguson is an assistant professor of recreation management and policy at the University of New Hampshire.
These are relatively age-old problems on Lake Erie, but that they are being exacerbated or increased by the presence of global climate change factors in the region.
For example, he says warmer temperatures are driving an increased rain cycle that's leading to fluctuating water levels and more runoff polluting the lake. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
So it turns out one of the things we thought was helping us with climate change isn't, at least not as much as we thought. It has to do with hungry bacteria in the soil. The Environment Report's Rebecca Williams has more.
Methane is one of the big three greenhouse gases that contribute to global warming.
Its concentration in the atmosphere has been going up at a rather high rate since the Industrial Revolution.
That's Peter Groffman. He's a professor at the City University of New York Advanced Science Research Center at the Graduate Center, and he spoke with us by Skype. In a new study, Groffman and his colleagues found we're overestimating how much soils help us out with methane.
To estimate conservatively, we would say we're overestimating it by about 50%.
Here's how it works. There are aerobic bacteria that live in soil.
And they have the ability to eat methane. These bacteria can extract the energy in methane and make a living.
Groffman found over the past couple of decades, soils are not able to pull methane out of the atmosphere as well as they used to. He says our changing climate means more rain in some parts of the world.
There's been more rainfall over time at our research sites, and that's making the soils wetter. And when the soils are wetter, the bacteria are less able to access the methane in the atmosphere.
He says they also looked at more than 300 other studies on methane uptake by soil.
And in parts of the world where precipitation has been increasing over the last 30 years or so, those studies were observing these declines in methane uptake.
Groffman says when methane is taken up like this, it's called a sink. He says the biggest methane sink is the atmosphere, but that soil plays an important role in the global balance of methane.
It's similar in size to the rate of increase in the atmosphere.
Groffman says we rely a lot on nature to help us, but nature has limits, and this has bigger implications as the climate changes.
We're going to have to work a little harder to control the sources of methane that we have an influence on.
He says that means reducing leaks from natural gas extraction and transport and being more efficient in how we produce rice, meat, and dairy products. That's because rice paddies produce methane, and so do cows. Groffman and his team did this work as part of a long-term ecological research project. He says nature is complex, and studying changes in our environment over decades teaches you things you just can't learn in shorter studies. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Rebecca Williams.
Thank you. Pennsylvania experienced a record number of power outages in 2017, and 2018 is shaping up to be another bad year. For State Impact Pennsylvania, Amy Sisk reports the grid may not be ready for the more severe weather climate change is bringing.
When the power goes out, calls to local utility companies come flooding in from people like Joan Petrillo with Martindale's Natural Market near Philadelphia. She must decide whether to send out an employee for dry ice to keep meat and other cold goods from spoiling.
You're talking about a store with very little storage space, so there's very little room to store dry ice. You just can't do it, so you have to buy it at the time that it's needed.
Sometimes food does go bad.
You're throwing out your livelihood, you know, what puts you in business. But you have to be safe.
Grocery stores, factories, hospitals, restaurants, they lost power more than ever last year, with 50 significant outages statewide. That's more than double the year before. Halfway through this year, the state's already seen 20. Katrina Kelly-Pitou is an energy researcher at the University of Pittsburgh. She advises utilities and says they can learn from recent extreme storms in Puerto Rico and Houston.
Invest now because it's way cheaper than investing later.
Climate change is expected to bring more intense weather.
I now don't know if we have time to say, let's try and figure out what to do. I think you have to be doing something to be proactive and keeping your lights on.
Pennsylvania utilities know this sound means trouble. Lightning, like during this recent storm over Pittsburgh, excessive rain, landslides, wind, ice in the winter, it can all damage equipment. Warren Stow is director of field operations for Duquesne Light in Pittsburgh.
It can put a lot of stress on your organization. Typically, it wouldn't be unusual for our employees to work 16 on, 8 off until we have the power back on.
That happened a lot last year. Duquesne had 6 big outages with more than 2,500 customers in the dark for longer than 6 hours. The commission warns that if frequent severe weather continues, utilities will struggle to maintain adequate service. The PUC can make poorly performing utilities create improvement plans. Several have such plans right now. Spokesperson Nils Hagen Fredrickson says the commission talks with utilities all the time about hardening their systems.
We know weather is coming. Regardless of the tempo of the weather, there will at some point in the future be another hurricane. There will at some point in the future be another torrential rainstorm.
Utilities are cutting back trees near power lines. They're installing digital meters to monitor power usage. And they're looking at microgrids, which create and distribute electricity for clusters of businesses or homes. Hagen Fredrickson says utilities need to ensure these two things.
Reliability is, can you take a punch? Resilience is how fast you get back up off the canvas after you've been hit hard.
Duquesne Light's crews are preparing for more storms. At the service center, trucks roll out for the day. Stow explains.
When I came in, I don't think we had any customers out, so they're all going out right now. They're going to be working on what we refer to as projects.
Installing new transformers and poles and auto switches to reroute power. Duquesne also wants faster response times. Operations Center Director Diane Holder says the company is developing a detailed map of its grid.
An electric model will provide their electric address to us, their precise location on a circuit.
The company will know exactly who's lost power, and it'll install a new system to react to outages and keep customers informed.
They could select the type of communication they would like back from Duquesne Light, whether it be a text, an email, or phone call, and get regular updates throughout their outage as far as our progress.
So businesses such as grocery stores can make plans, like whether to run across town to stock up on dry ice. Amy Sisk, State Impact Pennsylvania.
In the late 1970s, hundreds of people in a New York neighborhood were evacuated from their homes for good after it was revealed they'd been exposed to dangerous industrial chemicals.
I wanted my family safe. And my husband, the cardiologist, when he found out where we were, he said, no way can he stay there. And so we did not stay there.
Later on the Allegheny front, remembering the Love Canal disaster. Stay tuned. Pittsburgh's air quality is much better than it used to be. But the city's air still isn't clean. For the Allegheny Front, WESA's Jacob Lazaro reports that after years of progress, there's been a slight increase in local air pollution.
John Zavacki has lived in Pittsburgh his whole life. The 86-year-old sits in the South Side's Market House Senior Center's cavernous main room. It's a hot July day, and an air conditioner hums in the background as he talks with a few friends. Compared to the past, he says today's air quality is fantastic.
Great improvement. I mean, you can look out and see whatever you're looking at. Before, with all the smoke and the stuff from the coke ovens, it was bad.
Although the city is a far cry from its industrial heyday, Pittsburgh still struggles with pollution.
Air quality in the Pittsburgh region was not good 249 days in 2016, and that's about two-thirds of the time.
That's Matthew Mihalik, executive director of the Breathe Project, an air quality advocacy group. He says Allegheny County's air quality can have negative health effects.
We are in the top 2% of counties nationwide for risk from cancer, from air toxics.
In addition, a recent study found that 22% of children attending Allegheny County schools located near sources of air pollution have asthma. That's more than double the national average. The Environmental Protection Agency tracks fine particle and ozone pollution across the United States to measure air quality. John Graham, a scientist with the nonprofit Clean Air Task Force, says local fine particle pollution can come from many sources, such as trucking.
When you're driving your car and you see a diesel truck in front of you and the truck is going uphill, you might see some black smoke coming out of the exhaust pipe.
Graham studies western Pennsylvania air quality and says heavy industry, such as U.S. Steel's Clairton Coke Works, is one of the biggest contributors. While Pittsburgh hasn't seen hazardous air days for a long time, it does see its fair share of moderate days and days that are unhealthy for sensitive groups. According to EPA data, last year the Pittsburgh area only had 105 days rated good for fine particle pollution. Moderate days were the majority by far, but 10 hit unhealthier ratings. That's in line with levels over the past decade. Graham says that going back to the year 2000, pollution across the United States has steadily declined, driven by shifts away from coal as well as stricter vehicle emissions regulations. But local fine particle pollution began to buck the national trend around 2014 with a small increase. Each subsequent year, the monitors record a rise in pollution.
There's some indication that there are local changes in emissions that may be responsible for the uptick.
Graham says year-to-year levels always have some variance due to local meteorology and weather patterns, but it's still visible in the data's three-year averages. The increase in particulates is quite small, only about a microgram, and it's mostly happening at the Liberty Monitor, which measures emissions from Clairton Coke Works about 15 miles south of the city.
I would guess that that's probably the most likely culprit.
U.S. Steel did not respond to repeated requests for comment, but the Allegheny County Health Department also faults the company. It recently fined U.S. Steel $1 million for violating pollution standards. Department Director Karen Hacker says the recent increase is very concerning.
We told them if they do not get their emissions in control, that we will tell them to shut down two of their batteries.
Batteries, or rows of coke ovens, are used to cook coal into coke for steel production. Jim Kelly, Deputy Director of Environmental Health, says the Liberty Monitor is currently failing the EPA's air quality standards, but that the focus on it is overblown. He says the negative impacts of the coke works are confined to a small area measured by the Liberty and North Braddock monitors.
You take those two monitors out of the equation, the rest of our monitors are, you know, well below the standard. And the Braddock monitor is below the standard as well, but it's higher than we would prefer.
Matthew Mihalik, with the Breathe Project, agrees that the Liberty monitor doesn't tell the whole story. But he says air pollution still affects the entire metro area. He cites 2016 data on the region's best-performing monitor, North Park, about 30 miles north of the Liberty Monitor.
So our best monitor is still in the worst half of pollution, measured particulate matter pollution in the country.
Graham, the scientist, also says there's no such thing as a safe level of air pollution. That means days with only moderate or even good pollution levels still have the potential to cause negative health effects. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Jacob Lazaro.
There are millions of pounds of garbage piled illegally around Allegheny County. That's according to a new study. Some of it has been sitting there for decades. The price to clean it all up? A mere $1 million. But would this make the problem go away? Public Source reporter Oliver Morrison recently visited one of these trash heaps to find out.
Danny Kramer is pulling up garbage entangled in vines. She's hidden down a short drop-off from the road at the end of a cul-de-sac in the Pittsburgh neighborhood of Homewood. This is the perfect spot to dump waste without being caught. After a couple of hours, the dumpster is nearly full and she takes stock.
A TV, a Christmas tree, some couch bits, some garbage cans, tiles, anything you would find in a kitchen garbage can.
Kramer and her partner, Al Chernoff, have been working their way up Wheeler Street for the past couple of weeks. Chernoff divides these sites into two categories.
Did they die or were they evicted? And this is a... they were evicted.
You can tell, he says, by what was tossed out.
Well, nobody's going to throw away, you know, all their kitchen plates and silverware and pots and pans all at the same time, you know, along with their kids' toys. So cheapest way of getting rid of all this stuff is to back it up into a dead-end street like this and toss it over the hillside.
The duo work for Allegheny Cleanways, a nonprofit that focuses on cleanups. They focus on big sites with at least 50 pounds of garbage. Many of the sites have a ton or more. Oftentimes, they're on steep hillsides or private land where city workers aren't allowed to go for legal reasons. These dumps can cause serious health problems. Mosquitoes breed inside old tires. Children step on needles or broken glass. Some recent studies have even shown living near trash can make people more depressed. And animals can get caught or injured. On the road to dump their load, Kramer says she found bones in the pile.
First I thought I found chicken bones, but then I found a skull that looked like either a cat or maybe a raccoon.
It's frustrating for neighbors, too. Back at the dump site, about 50 feet away, Leo Butler stands on the porch with his 7-year-old daughter, Leah Maya. He parks his car in the way to block access to the dump site, but he works at McDonald's during the day, leaving the cul-de-sac open.
I saw someone dumping the trash back there.
It's always trash up there. Somebody's always coming up here dumping something, throwing something over there. It's constantly every day.
Butler recently cleared nearly an acre of brush and bamboo next to his house. Then he has to watch as garbage is dumped next to his property after all the work he puts in.
Yeah, a whole lot of work. I use a lawnmower and a weed whacker.
How long did it take you?
A few days.
About 50 feet in the other direction, there are more homes, but they are Penn Hills homes just outside the city limits. And it turns out, many neighborhoods in the county have trash problems just as bad or worse than the Butlers do in Pittsburgh. It had been more than a decade since the last time anyone looked around the county, so Chernoff and Kramer drove county roads all winter, looking for hidden nooks, steep hillsides, or abandoned properties, places where they often find garbage. They drove every street in the county.
We drove on some truly terrifying streets. There's so many roads in Pittsburgh that I don't think should be considered roads for vehicular travel. They're just so steep and horrifying.
They found around 500 illegal dump sites with an estimated 3 million pounds of garbage. That's 4 times as much as the last survey. But during that 2005 survey, Pennsylvania Cleanways chose not to go into some neighborhoods if the surveyors felt unsafe due to crime. But in the new survey, these areas turned out to have the biggest dumping problems. Just 8 municipalities contain half of the county's dump sites, and all but 2 of those have large populations living in poverty, like McKeesport. It has the most with 48. Penn Hills comes in second with 44. Even though Penn Hills isn't as economically distressed, its dump sites are concentrated in a couple struggling neighborhoods. Chris Blackwell, the planning director for Penn Hills, has been trying to stop illegal dumping for 25 years.
Now I'm kind of suspect. When I'm sitting at a traffic light or sitting at an intersection and I see a truck go by and it's got pieces of wood and stuff sticking out of it, and I want to get behind it and follow it to figure out where it's going.
Blackwell is the kind of guy who digs through trash to find evidence. The problem confounds him. People are taking mattresses and furniture that would be picked up for free in front of their homes and dumping right next to signs that say, "No dumping." Blackwell takes me out to some of Penn Hills' problem areas like Lincoln Park, where there are a lot of vacant homes.
I think those are areas where they're sort of almost like no man's land, like they're not patrolled regularly, things like that.
One of the biggest problems is discarded tires. Right now it costs hauling companies $3 to recycle them, so they dump the tires illegally and pocket the money. There are more than 27,000 used tires scattered around the county. Blackwell actually caught a hauling company that had been dumping hundreds of tires over the side of a hill.
It's $100,000, $50,000 to clean up that tire dump. And And then and we caught them and we prosecuted them. But the tires still are there today.
The hauling company didn't have enough money to pay for the cleanup. But Myrna Newman, the executive director of Allegheny Cleanway, says not all of the dump sites are this challenging.
We literally are dealing with still dump sites that are 50 and plus years old. So if we can get a lot of those cleaned up, I do think that a big portion of the problem would be solved. Some of them just have never been addressed.
For a little under $900,000, she estimates, the county could clean up every dump site and start fresh. Though, even with full funding, she says, optimistically, it could take 5 to 10 years. In the meantime, Chernoff and Kramer are removing loads one by one. They recently passed an alley that they had cleaned earlier in the week. The alley was already filled with 8 discarded tires.
Yeah, I could get angry and pound my fist and yell out. I just picked up the 8 tires and threw it in the truck.
For the Allegheny Front, I'm Oliver Morrison of Public Source.
Heading out on a long drive to the beach? Catch up on the Trump on Earth podcast. We've been following what the administration has been doing with environmental policy.
Turns out he doesn't have the power as president to cancel international agreements.
Trump has turned the car around, but he hasn't gone very far.
Check out the Trump on Earth podcast from the Allegheny Front and Point Park University's Environmental Journalism Program at trumponearth.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Love Canal is a neighborhood in Niagara Falls that in the 1970s became a symbol of environmental catastrophe. In the 1940s, a chemical company bought and converted the canal there into a toxic waste dump. Later, a school was built on top of the old landfill, and homes were built nearby, exposing kids and residents to chemical pollution that even seeped into people's basements. It was the first time a man-made disaster was declared a federal health emergency. This year is the 40th anniversary of President Jimmy Carter making that declaration. WBFO's Nick Lippa produced an audio postcard with remembrances from Love Canal evacuees Luella Kenny and former TV reporter Dick Lucinski.
We'll take you to Thursday night's long-awaited announcement by the State Health Department on whether or not the state of New York will pay for the evacuation of any more Niagara Falls families living near the Love Canal.
Pregnant women living in the canal area extending from 97th to 103rd Street be removed from the area.
My name is Luella Kenny. 40 years ago, I lived here in Love Canal. I had a home with 3 young sons. And suddenly, one day, we're told there's chemicals there, and the chemicals were seeping into our backyards. During this time, my youngest son became ill, and he was the only one that was born here in Love Canal, and he became ill with an immune response disease. And within 6 months, he was dead.
My name is Dick Lucinski. My wife and I lived on Mason Court in the northern end of the Declaration area of the Love Canal back in the late 70s, early 80s. I was covering it for Channel 2 News for a number of years, starting back in, I believe it was 1976, before it all got crazy. Beyond a health crisis, it was a real study in human emotion and human psychology. What do you do with these people who had to go? And it wasn't a type of thing where it was a tornado or a hurricane. This was a slow motion disaster.
We have also brought to the governor our recommendation that children under 2 years of age be removed from the canal until such time as they are older than 2 or until such time as extensive environmental data.
I wanted my family safe, and my husband, the cardiologist, when he found out where we were, He said, no way can he stay there. And so we did not stay there. He eventually passed away following a heart transplant in 2000. But, you know, at least we had some years together.
What was serious, let's put it that way, is the psychology of the whole thing. How it affected their minds, you know, like my wife or my neighbor or my child, God forbid, was afflicted with cancer. Did that cause it? Or did it not cause it? Or did it have nothing to do with it? There's always that lingering doubt, and it plays on your mind for the rest of your life, and then you feel, oh, geez, I bought this house here, and now they're dead. Did I have something to do with it by buying that house in that neighborhood? People in auditoriums, whether town meetings, city meetings, you could see the panic in their faces, the screaming, the yelling.
Who are you? You're an a**! You're just a big old man! You're not human, you're in the heart! You're the one that's done this to people! You can't ruin our lives like this! You're destroying us!
What am I going to do with my family? Where am I going to go?
I want to know if I can go home and live with my mother and find you again.
No.
I need to go to my grandmother's house. I want to know if I'll be able to grow up to be a normal man.
You want to buy my house? Nobody's going to buy it. How am I going to leave?
Put us out before we're after. Put us out before we want.
They called us hysterical housewives because they wouldn't tell us what was going on, what was happening. Well, yes, you will get hysterical if you know. I mean, I go in the backyard there, and I could smell chemicals. I could see chemicals in the creek.
What are you going to say to me if she can never have children, if she gets leukemia from these chemicals? What are you going to say to me?
There was all that, and it just built to a crescendo.
Contrary to reports elsewhere that about 130 families will soon be relocated, Channel 17 reports has learned the actual number.
What you put into the ground was supposed to stay in the ground, stay where it was, not bother you again. And that was the attitude toward it. You know, okay, it's buried, it's gone. Well, it kind of rose, it was like a horror show. Rose out of the ground and came back and attacked us. And now we know better. We hope.
My child,
ma'am,
where is the difference?
The disaster at Love Canal led to the creation of Superfund, the federal program to clean up sites polluted with hazardous waste. That audio postcard about Love Canal was produced by WBFO's Nick Lippa. And his story comes to us from Great Lakes Today, which is a collaboration of WBFO Buffalo, IdeaStream Cleveland, and WXXI Rochester. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. I'm Carol Holsapple.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration among the Allegheny Front, WESA, WITF, and WHYY to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy.